Les colloques du Collège de France.
Extremely grateful for being here. Congrats then for your triple crown birthday. And thank you so much for bringing all of us here. I met Stan a while ago, and just before starting a PhD on his lab, and I already had read all of his work, I was fascinated by it. And I want to highlight one of the texts that was very inspiring to me, which was actually his inaugural lecture here at Collège de France called Towards the Science of Mental Life. And then I was baffled by the intellectual elegance of some of these ideas. They were quite simple, but at the same time, very profound. And at some point he says, by a curious recursive loop, the mathematics produced by the human mind help us formulate its laws. So when I think about Stan, I think about compression of ideas, and I think compression is a hallmark of intelligence. So thank you so much for inspiring us. So about 30 years ago, Stan and Lohan proposed this putative network from neuropsychology studies. And I'm not going to go into detail because of the great introductions by Ed and Evelyn. But basically, they proposed these two main systems. Patients with parietal, outer parietal region, lesions had problems with approximate calculation, but spared exact calculation. And to defend Stan from yesterday's corticocentric myopia, they actually reported a case with a basal ganglia lesion that had problems with subcortical, problems with exact calculation, specifically retrieval of arithmetic facts, but preserved approximate calculation. And at the time, they proposed another system that will be mentioned yesterday as well, the visual number form area that was later confirmed by intracranial recordings from Joseph's lab. This launched a series of research programs that several labs took to try to understand better the math network. And as shown in the talks before, this model was largely confirmed. So extreme, incredible progress over the past 30 years to our understanding of the math network in the brain. But of course, several burning questions remain. Evelyn has been advancing a lot on the anatomical specificity, but we don't know very much about the specific causal roles because neuropsychology can't resolve that very precisely, and especially the spatiotemporal dynamics that requires high temporal resolution methods. So, that's more or less the line of research that I started at Stan's lab, looking at the spatiotemporal dynamic of arithmetic computations in the human brain at different levels, different scales, and macro, meso, and micro scales. And I'm very happy that I think all of the collaborators that I have been working over the past years are here in this meeting. I think it's the first time that they are all together. We develop some continuous behavioral methods to track covert stages during decision while participants are doing arithmetic. With Manuela, we develop methods to decode the temporal evolution of arithmetic and numerical representational codes using MEG. And with Joseph, during my postdoc, we used intracranial recordings to look at the fine-grained communication between these regions. And more recently at UCSF, we are using NeuroPixels with Eddie Cheng to look at single cell recordings. So I'm going to mostly talk about the work with Joseph using intracranial recordings in humans, both using surface electrodes and depth electrodes that he mentioned yesterday. So when I arrived in the lab, there was a lot of data collected, and we expanded that collection of data set of a large EEG database that spanned over 10,000 electrodes in 85 patients. And we basically asked these participants, the subjects, to do two different tasks. One was the simultaneous calculation task and a sequential calculation task, with the control being a memory, autobiographical memory task, or language. It's actually essentially a language task. They have to read and decide whether a sentence is true or false. So when we look at the activations or engagement of all of these electrodes in the brain, we see pretty much spread across the whole brain. Not all of the electrodes are engaged, but all of the regions of the brain seem to participate, cortical and subcortical. 80% of these engagements are activations, so it means the activity increases following baseline. 20% are deactivated after baseline. But when we look specifically at the differential response or the preferentiality response between math and non-math, we see this striking pattern that is very, very, very strong effect. So here's an IPS site that shows about 3 standard deviations higher for math compared to non-math, and then the non-math condition is not different from baseline, and we see this in these two different tasks. So when we look at this across all of the electrodes, we start seeing some patterns to emerge that really resembles this 30 years ago model that Stan and Lohan proposed. The math network seems to be quite bilateral, whereas this network related to the autobiographical memory task or language task seems to be quite left lateralized and overlap quite a bit with the language areas. When we look at where the information about math concentrates, we see those 9 main regions that concentrate at most of the preferential responses. I'm going to go this just, I'm not going to spend too much time here, but responding to one of the questions that we were asking yesterday. The regions that show most of these math preferential responses, they don't only contain math preferential responses. They contain preferential responses for the non-math condition as well. But what is interesting is that they seem to be juxtaposed and continuously organized along a single anatomical axis. So, for example, in the fusiform gyrus, it's mostly on the right hemisphere. In the posterior ITG, in the number form area is more lateral. And then you have several regions that math occupies more anterior portions and several regions where math occupy more posterior portions. So then we start to look at the spatial-temporal dynamics of arithmetic computation. So here's a region that doesn't have specificity for math. It's a lateral occipital gyrus. It activates pretty much the same for both math and non-math in both tasks. And here's another region in the premotor cortex that response is time locked to the response to the button press, and also not specific to math. But here's a set of 7 regions that we had substantial number of sites recorded with both tasks. And then we see a kind of a same pattern. The activity really rises up and stays sustained almost entirely until the response, until the verification stage. And then in the sequential task, we see very clearly that the activity in the rises or the math regions engage at the precise time when the subjects can initiate the calculation. That means following the second operand. So 2 plus 3, they can then start calculating. And then we also see that 20% of the regions actually deactivate following the calculation. The main one is the posterior medial cortex. And what is interesting is that the activity there deactivates just a little delayed from the activation and not too strong of a deactivation. So it's still pretty much aligned in time with the activation. And you see this even more clear in the sequential task, that the deactivation actually occurs right at the time of the second operand, when they actually are engaging in the calculation. And then we see that in several regions, almost all of them part of the default network. So here's another study that we did, trying to dissect this mentalized network, or regions that are involved in thinking about self and others in the autobiographical memory task. And here's just a tip that the best remedy for rumination is basically mental math. So if you are struggling and thinking about yourself too much, the best thing you can do is to shut down your default network is do mental math. So then we can start looking a bit closer at the temporal evolution of this region. So here's the video that shows the stimuli all at once, and then you see this temporal evolution from ventrotemporal to lateral parietal to prefrontal cortex. And here's a simplified version of this video that shows this kind of order of activations. When we plot the time courses, it becomes very clear that there is a successive ignition of these regions, that most of them, except maybe the fusiform gyrus, have a sharp drop, but most of them remain active until the until the decision of correct or incorrect is made, especially the IFG that remains quite stable across the whole processing chain. And then, as Josef showed yesterday, if we normalize by reaction time, you see very clearly that most of these regions, there is like this successive activations, and then most of them remain active until the trial ends. So we can then calculate the precise onset of these regions' engagement, and we see this nice temporal order of activations across these regions. These are the moments when these regions are firstly engaged in calculation. So this is a simplified scheme showing these like eight steps that the calculation stimuli, or let's say calculation computations, happen in the brain following this path that is not like, it's kind of back and forth in the brain. So you see this from the ventrotemporal to parietal, then frontal, then back to SMG, then back and back to the frontal cortex, and then finally in the button press in the premotor cortex. So this is not perfect, but it's definitely not an artifact of averaging across subjects. So we were fortunately enough to have 16 subjects with three or more of these regions that were recorded simultaneously. And then for the most part, it pretty much follows the same order independent of the regions that we start with. So 1 through 5 or 1, 2, 3 or 3, 4, 5, they seem to always kind of fall in this same temporal order. So, and because we are using intracranial recordings, we can even go deeper to the single trial level. So this is a subject that had 5 regions with simultaneous coverage. And here you see the average and then the single trial plots sorted by reaction time on all of these 5 regions. And you see a very nice, clear temporal alignment across within trial level. So this is a video showing all of these regions like sequentially being activated until the button press. And then we see this the same for the sequential task. So the question now is then, how do these regions communicate with each other? So if we think about the two main nodes of this network, as proposed 30 years ago again, the IPS and the posterior inferior temporal gyrus, they seem to be quite correlated. Even just looking at the plots, they seem quite similar. If we calculate the cross-correlation, we see the very high cross-correlation across trials, with just a slight delay of the IPS, a bit shifted to the right. And for this particular subject, we were lucky enough to bring them back 5 years after the surgery. And they had a little resection in the temporal pole, as you can see here. But we did resting state fMRI for about an hour to estimate very clearly the functional networks. And we did a seed-based functional connectivity, putting a seed in the centroid of the IPS electrode. And the region that mostly correlated with the activity in the IPS was the centroid of the ITG electrode, and vice versa. So we were very interested in exploring this further. And what we started to do is to say, OK, let's correlate each pair of regions and see how they organized. So in the ITG, you see there is a higher correlation with the IPS, then a smaller correlation with the MSFG, and then even smaller correlation with the PSPL. So we see that kind of systematically that the functional connectivity decreases with temporal distance. Not anatomical distance, but temporal distance. And then the early visual region that activates for independently of the task was not very highly correlated or functionally connected to the other regions of the network. So since we had 219 pairs of electrodes across several subjects, we were able to test that systematically. And we saw that that was the case for most of these regions. So the idea is really that the functional connectivity decreases with temporal distance, suggesting maybe 3 hypotheses that we haven't further investigated specifically. But maybe information is partially leaked during the processing chain, or they could be transformed into different codes. As Evelyn was saying, it's hard to cross the code from one region to another, or they can be just temporarily misaligned and hard to for us to grab when one starts and when the other one starts. So that would be a very interesting next question. And then I just wanted to finish with this and then show a simulation video that we tried to do, we basically looked at where different arithmetic features are encoded, and what we found using coding models is that there is a lot of distributive code, and most of these arithmetic features, the mean operand, the max operand, the cross decade, the format, and the absolute deviant, are mostly encoded in this math regions, not only in the math super preferential regions, but mostly in the math regions that are quite active. So then, just to end, how much time do I have?
You're supposed to be done.
Yeah. Should I show this quick video? Yeah. So we then finally, what we try to do, we have several studies. I'm going to show one of the electrical stimulation. We had this particular patient that we had coverage around the IPS and SPL, and we did a resting state fMRI to precisely estimate their functional networks, and then we situated in the surface level the electrodes, and you can see when you do that actually some of these electrodes that are 2 millimeters, they can occupy at sometimes, they can measure maybe activity of 2 different networks, even though they could be located in the IPS, they could be touching kind of like dorsoparietal and frontoparietal and dorsal attention networks. So you see the first 2 electrodes were the most active and most preferential for math, but the third one was also, and the third one and the second one were occupying these 2 networks. So when we stimulated the first 2 pairs, we saw no effect. And when we stimulated the second 2 pairs, we saw this strong effect that I'm going to show, suggesting that maybe you can disrupt calculation by actually interfering in those 2 networks at the same time, but not in a single network. So here's Josef. Let's see if the audio is going to work. So here's Josef asking the patient to do calculation.
Can you count? Yeah, now. 197, 94, 91, 88, 85, 89, 85, 82, 79, 76, 73, 70, 67, 64, 61, 58, 55.
As you can see, the patient was kind of having fun. He was an electrical engineer and very interested in math, so he really enjoyed this experiment. To conclude, we observe a spatial organization. Most of the brain regions are recruited bilaterally during mental calculation. Most, 80%, are activated, 20% deactivated. We observe this mesoscale architecture that math preferential regions have functional organization at the mesoscale, with those sides for math and non-math juxtaposed and continuously organized along anatomical axis. And we see this temporal dynamics of partial overlapping neural states following a consistent temporal order, and the functional connectivity between these areas seems to decrease with temporal order. And then we observe that arithmetic features are encoded across the distributed network of math active regions. And as you can see, we saw that electrical stimulation over parietal and dorsal attention networks causally disrupt calculation. Thank you so much.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.